Realnewsmatters.com studios. It's The Real News with your host, David Knight.
Welcome on this Friday, August 24th, 2018. I am David Knight, your host. We're going to be talking about the back and forth between President Trump and Jeff Sessions. And I want to give you some of the things that have happened with Jeff Sessions. This is about more than what's going on with President Trump. It's about people who are very, very guilty, like Imran Awan, and the Justice Department not doing anything about that. I mean, that is a smoking gun, if ever there was a smoking gun of corruption. And this guy's going to walk. DOJ, nothing. Nothing. But when it comes to the Bundy family and others, the Department of Justice, even after they've been exposed as being incredibly corrupt, lying, rigging the trial, even to the extent after a whistleblower with the BLM exposed all of this, to the point where the judge couldn't cover up for this anymore, couldn't put gag orders on the defense attorneys. And she'd been working to make sure that they were not able to call people who would testify in defense of the Bundy family and tell people what was really going on there, hiding exculpatory evidence, evidence that would show that they were innocent, that would show that the aggressors were the FBI and the BLM. And, of course, the Justice Department was also complicit in that. But after the whistleblower came out and told what was going on there, she couldn't cover it up anymore because it was going to come back on her if she started doing that. Nevertheless, as we pointed out, the prosecutors there who were part of the Obama group continued to come after the Bundys. 6 months later, they said, we want this reopened again. They've now filed an appeal to get this reopened again. Jeff Sessions is doing nothing about that either, just as he's doing nothing about what's going on and on and on and on with President Trump. The injustice that is happening everywhere, even to the extent of the persecution of the Christian baker in Colorado. They've now come after him again. Not even a month after he was exonerated by the Supreme Court, and after the Supreme Court chastised the same state organization, they come after him again. Now, one of the things the Department of Justice should be doing is when you have this kind of boss hog corruption at a state level, they're supposed to step in and do something about it. He doesn't do anything about it. He talks about how he wants to protect Christians from persecution. He doesn't do anything about that either. And then look at what is happening with cannabis and marijuana. While he doesn't lock up guilty people or come after guilty people, he doesn't defend the innocent either. This is a Department of Justice that is out of control. It is Obama's Department of Justice. And Jeff Sessions has recused himself from all of it. And that's not any excuse. He says, well, I took charge of this department when I became attorney general. And President Trump said he never took charge. Trying to be nice to him, you know. It's like trying to throw him a rope out there. Here, take yourself out. Just resign. And see, that's the issue. Jeff Sessions is not going to resign. And that's the difficult political issue for President Trump. We're going to talk about what senators are saying with that as well. And then we've had another step up of corporate fascism. We now have a conservative group, David Horowitz's Freedom Center, taken down by the Southern Poverty Law Center. This is an organization that if there was an attorney general, they ought to do something about this. This is an organization, the Southern Poverty Law Center, they just had to pay a $3+ million settlement to somebody that they had slandered. They have provoked two violent attacks. One of them against congressmen. It was a provocation from the Southern Poverty Law Center, labeling them as hateful individuals. Another person tried to shoot up a Christian organization, Family Research Council, or Center, FRC. When you have an organization like that, and when they are operating to take down all political speech that they disagree with, where is the Attorney General with that? We'll be right back. Stay with us. I'm David Knight.
You found it. It's InfoWars.com studios in Austin, Texas. It's your host, David Knight.
Welcome on this Friday, August 24th, 2018. I'm David Knight, your host. Your President Trump is being criticized in the mainstream media because he said Jeff Sessions isn't doing anything. He said, I hired him because he was an early and loyal supporter, but he never took charge. And Sessions comes back angrily saying, I am in charge. I am doing everything. Well, let's give him the responsibility for some of the things that the Department of Justice is doing and not doing. Let's start with this example. Do you remember just a few months ago, we had a pedestrian bridge near Florida International University, and that bridge was over the road. It's about a $14 million pedestrian bridge that was being built, and they were putting it in place. They didn't close off the area to traffic, and as people were stopped at a stoplight, that bridge collapsed and crushed a lot of people under a horrific situation. Six people were killed. People that were in their cars were crushed along with their cars. Nobody that was involved in that, not the state, not the city, not the university, not the federal government that had given them a grant. Nobody decided that they would close the road while they were working on it. And now we've got Jeff Sessions, Department of Justice, trying to block any information about that. Because people said, we want to know what's going on there. And the Miami Herald reported that a state judge had ruled earlier this week that Florida law calls those documents public records and they have to be released. What was going on? Who is responsible? We don't want this type of thing to happen again. That's why we have an investigation. And so a state judge in Florida says that's public information. That needs to be put out there. But of course, everything that our government does is now to be hidden from us. And this insanity comes from the federal government. That's why it's so difficult to do any kind of reporting. Nobody that you talk to now, even at the state and local level, they've all act as if they work for the CIA. Oh, this is classified. Can't talk to you about that. And it is not the CIA that they work for. It's the CYA. They're just trying to cover their butts. We understand what that's about. I mean, take a look at the House Intelligence Committee hearing. We all knew what was in it. Everybody that's been following this knew what was in that report. We had put all those pieces together. We knew what was in it. There was no surprise in it. The only surprise was that the FBI and the Department of Justice fought to keep that secret. Finally, President Trump said, I'm going to declassify it. I'm going to declassify it without any redactions. And we saw there was absolutely no reason for that stuff to be kept from the public. There was nothing that compromised the safety of anybody who was an undercover agent or any techniques. What it did was it exposed the corruption of the bureaucracy that is trying to cover themselves in every respect, the deep state coup. And so here you have a situation where you have people at the state, local level, they want to know, why did this happen? How could this happen? Who is responsible for this? How do we stop this from happening again? The federal government comes in and says, no, you can't release that. Did that yesterday. Yesterday, the Miami Herald reported that the National Transportation Safety Board announced a plan to ask that the case be moved to federal court to get it away from the state judge who wants to give the public information. So they're going to move it into federal court so they can cover this up. This is the National Transportation Safety Board. These are the same people who say it's okay for the big corporations like Google and Tesla to experiment on the roads with you and the lives of your children with self-driving cars, and we don't have to worry about that. The same people also say that even though we know that the Takata airbags are blowing up and have killed over a dozen people worldwide, you're not going to be able to turn those things off until you actually get them to replace them for you. Same people said you couldn't do that when the early designs of airbags were killing women and children in cars. No, can't turn those things off. Not going to allow you to do that. Wow. Yeah, they're really concerned about our safety, aren't they, at the National Transportation Safety Board? Nothing can be put out there. And so here you have the U.S. Attorney's Office for the Northern District of Florida. These are the people who work for Jeff Sessions, said that it would ask a federal judge to quash a state court ruling. This is from the Miami Herald, that ordered the Florida Department of Transportation to release records relating to the collapse of the Miami Herald, according to a court filing made on Thursday. At issue is why state officials failed to close the road under the bridge before it collapsed, killing six people. And so Judicial Watch is trying to get this information. And they write, can the federal government withhold records that are public under state law simply by claiming that the departments are part of that the documents are part of an ongoing investigation? See, Jeff Sessions, who swore to uphold the Constitution, doesn't seem to know or care about the 10th Amendment. The federal government should not be involved in this case whatsoever. But they intrude themselves into this case in order to hide information that could be used to enhance public safety, and they do it in the name of public safety. And I picked this issue to start with because we've got so many others, because it doesn't have any political agenda. It doesn't have an organization on one side or the other. I've got other cases here of M1 Iran, of Pot, of the Bundys, of a Christian baker who's being persecuted. Every one of these other issues. People look at this and say, well, I agree with this issue. I don't agree with this issue. So you do whatever you need to get what I want to have happen, which is what we're seeing with free speech now. Nobody understands the principles involved. So let's talk about this issue. You got a bridge collapsing on people, and we can't know why. Why? Because the federal government has to make the case. They have to cover everything up and pretend that the government never makes any mistakes. And we're going to cover for every government employee from Jeff Sessions down to the people working on the roads, the dog catchers. Everybody gets immunity. Everybody gets secrecy. Everything they do is hidden, so nobody has any responsibility. Everybody is covered. It's just absolutely amazing. And this is a good example because it doesn't come with any political baggage. Can't we all agree that we would like to know what the procedures are so we can fix them so a bridge doesn't collapse on people and crush them in their cars? That's not a partisan issue. Every one of these other issues can become partisan. And they become partisan mainly because the federal government intrudes itself into every aspect of our life. There isn't any aspect of our life that the federal government doesn't come in and start telling us to do this or to do that. And so everything becomes a political fight in our lives. And then you have the corruption in Washington. Imran Awan, the accused Pakistani IT spy in Congress. This is from Need to Know. They recapped what has happened. The federal judge, Tanya Chutkan, chose to give no jail time to former Democrat IT aide Imran Awan, saying he has suffered enough. Poor fellow. Gave him 3 months of supervised release. Nothing. The Justice Department, Jeff Sessions' Justice Department, also gave him a pass, despite bank fraud and the Inspector General's finding that Awan made, quote, unauthorized access to House computers. They stole equipment, too. And they were paid an exorbitant salary. These guys, who had no IT background whatsoever, were brought in and paid exorbitant salaries that were much, much higher than anybody else who was working IT staff. Way above their pay grade. What is going on here? Oh, let's not look at that. Folks, this is Obama's Justice Department still in control. Jeff Sessions hasn't got a clue, even on this issue. Awan is at the center of a string of alleged crimes in Pakistan that include a fraudulent real estate deal, land theft, threatening his stepmother in order to take over an inheritance from his dead father. In America, he's been accused of bigamy, threatening his wife, immigration fraud. However, the judge said he had suffered enough. And his lawyer, who is a former Hillary Clinton aide, Chris Gowan, submitted a letter saying that President Trump, Senator Chuck Grassley, and other Republicans are deranged, pathetic, and without a shred of decency. And Jeff Sessions does nothing. He is a do-nothing. He has stepped aside and allowed this corruption. And yesterday, he owned it. We'll be right back. I'm David Knight. Welcome back. I'm David Knight. We're just talking about Jeff Sessions. Is President Trump justified to criticize him? As I said in the very first segment, picked on the case of the collapsing pedestrian bridge that crushed six people in their cars, killed them. A state judge says we need to find out what happened. That's a matter of public record. The federal government comes in, the National Highway Traffic Safety Board says, oh, no, we don't want to know what happened. You can't know about that. Governments don't make mistakes. We are perfect from top to bottom, and we're not going to let you know that information. And we're going to move this into a federal court, and we're going to have the Department of Justice attorneys hide that information from you. That's Jeff Sessions' Department of Justice. Now, that's not political, folks. That's criminal. That's bureaucratic. That's criminally bureaucratic. They all, as I said, act like the CIA in order to CYA. And then we have this case of Imran Awan. Let's get political. The fact that he got absolutely no jail time for any of this corruption, that his lawyer, Hillary Clinton aide Chris Gowan, wrote a letter saying that President Trump, Senator Grassley, other Republicans are deranged, pathetic, and without a shred of decency for attacking this guy. Well, what did he do? You know, according to Gowan, Hillary's lawyer, Imran Awan was motivated by love. He had a father who was dying in Virginia when he flew to Pakistan. He was in a panic to get money to urgently build a charity hospital that he described as going to be a women's shelter. There we go. We got all of the, you're ticking all of the boxes here, you know. Even going to add a handicap ramp, I guess, you know, for the hospital, for little children, too. He described the urgent moves as securing his father's legacy. He did it all out of love. All the embezzlement, all the theft, all the espionage. It was done out of love, Judge. And then as they point out in this article from Need to Know, they say, well, actually, a 2009 Pakistani newspaper article details police reports and lawsuits in Pakistan from these people, as well as interviews. Those allege that Imran tried to cut off others with a fraud-plagued real estate deal and secure a massive inheritance in the form of a major real estate complex known as a colony. A dozen farmers accused Imran and his father of stealing their land and subdividing it to build the colony. The 2009 article said Imran used political muscle stemming from his job in Congress to attempt to frame his alleged victims. Never mind the fact that we had all of these Democrats who had hired him and their emails are being hacked by people in Pakistan. And they're allowed to travel with massive amount of cash. Oh, that's okay. They work for Debbie Wasserman Schultz, and the Democrats know them. They can go now. You can let them travel with cash. What would happen to anybody else traveling with cash? Well, we've seen what happens with people who travel with cash. I reported multiple small black businessmen. Oh, you got cash and you're going to fly? Oh, you must be a drug dealer. Take the cash. If we can't find anything to charge him with, if he is a legitimate black businessman, will still take the cash. He'll have to sue us, and he doesn't have the money to do that. That's called civil asset forfeiture. That's something else that Jeff Sessions has embraced. He wants more of that. More of that. And then take a look at cannabis. While he won't lock up the criminals, while he hides information about a bridge collapsing, can't have the public knowing anything about that. That might make the government look bad. Then he has his little own petty war on drugs. Look, I understand if Jeff Sessions has a misguided, because he's very old. He's even older than I am. And you know, people of a certain generation still think it's a great idea to use the police to get people off of drugs. That hasn't worked. It has done nothing but corrupt the police. It hasn't done any good for anybody. It has corrupted the police. It has created more intensified versions of all these drugs, just like it did under alcohol prohibition, if anybody was paying attention to that. But unlike alcohol prohibition, they never passed the constitutional amendment required to do it lawfully and legally. And of course, as Attorney General, Jeff Sessions doesn't care about that because he doesn't care about your protections to not have your property stolen without being convicted of even something that they pretend is a crime. And quite frankly, to lock people up for a UN agenda is something that ought to really make conservatives angry. It makes me angry. Once you realize that the war on drugs is a UN agenda, that was created by the UN in 1961 before it was enacted by President Nixon in 1971. It makes you kind of angry to see that happen. It makes you kind of angry to see nonviolent people locked up. More people locked up in America than any other country, not even as a percentage, but as an absolute number. Any other country in history. Not Stalin's Russia, but our America. And you have to pay for that. I don't want to pay for people to be separated from their families when they're not doing anything that harms anybody. I don't want to pay the taxes to do that. I don't want to punish people like that. I don't want to take people's property without having a trial, even charging them with something, let alone finding them guilty. But Jeff Sessions does. And I have a problem with Jeff Sessions because of that. You got the state Senate in California are now looking at erasing criminal records for people because they have now erased this unconstitutional war on drugs for at least marijuana. They haven't gotten rid of the entire thing, but at least marijuana. You know, President Trump could get out in front of this and he could get credit for being a great reformer and correcting a great injustice and restoring one aspect of the Constitution. But he's got an attorney general who is dragging his feet. President Trump has come out and said, look, I support prison reform. I support some of these reforms for marijuana that have been put out there by bipartisan groups and so forth. But you got Jeff Sessions out there saying, step it up, step it up. We got to do more of this. We got to arrest more people for pot. And in California, they're going to get the credit for being rational for once on one thing. Absolutely crazy. California is going to get the credit for this. One step closer to wiping away old cannabis convictions after lawmakers in the state voted on a bill this week that would retroactively erase the charges. This is being reported by Free Thought Project. And of course, if it's not a crime and they never hurt anybody and it was never constitutional, why would we put that on their record anyway? The text of the bill specifies that the State Department of Justice will examine cases that took place between 1975 and 2016 to check for eligibility. You know, the only good thing about all this is that Jeff Sessions has illustrated to everybody the importance of state nullification. Jeff Sessions, by his unconstitutional acts, has shown everybody the importance of the 10th Amendment. And that's the important thing about this. It's even to the point where the federal government is coming after people for CBD, which doesn't have any psychoactive component. It's THC that does. And so you've got even people like Mitch McConnell coming out and saying, we've got to get rid of the prohibition on hemp because hemp doesn't have THC. But you have the Justice Department and the people under Jeff Sessions going out and arresting people who have CBD products. That is a medicine, Sessions. Sessions ought to be arrested. And then we'll talk about, when we come back, we'll talk about what he's doing still to the people associated with the Bundy trial and what he is not doing there. And even how he is not defending Christians. He just spoke to a bunch of people, said, I'm going to help you with the religious persecution. He doesn't even do that. We'll be right back. I'm David Knight.
Covering the ongoing fight for the heart and soul of America. Broadcasting from deep in the heart of Texas, it's David Knight.
Welcome back. You know, as we're talking about the back and forth between President Trump and Jeff Sessions, and I've started out this broadcast saying, look at what is happening with the Department of Justice, hiding and concealing information about a bridge collapse. How do you justify it? That is not political. You know, you can talk about President Trump and say, well, you know, he's just angry because what is happening. And the Democrats look at that and say, he deserves it. We want to get him. He's a criminal and so forth. But this is not political. This is Jeff Sessions' Justice Department criminally concealing information about a bridge collapse, trying to pull it into federal court because the state judge says we need to get this information. Public should know what happened with this. Six people were crushed in their cars. No. We're going to pull it into federal court so we can hide this and conceal it. Just as they have hidden and concealed so much stuff from the House Intelligence Committee. These are the people who have been cleared for intelligence purposes to oversee the intelligence agencies. There's absolutely no excuse for anybody at the FBI or the Department of Justice or the CIA or the NSA to say you can't see this. They're supposed to be overseen by these people. But it tells you who the real government is. And it tells you that Jeff Sessions isn't in charge, or if he is in charge, as he says he is, he has owned this corruption. And so I talk about concealing a bridge collapse, or about Imran Iran giving a pass for things that are most like bank fraud, for theft of equipment, for likely espionage, besides the political dirty tricks. Oh, Jeff Sessions' Justice Department just gives him a pass. As I said, also pushing the unconstitutional war on drugs, especially with pot, and continuing and trying to accelerate this unconstitutional process of civil asset forfeiture. All these different things. And that's before you get to the personal issues that involve President Trump. This never-ending persecution of Trump and his family for this Mueller conspiracy theory, the Russian conspiracy theory. There is absolutely no proof of this, and this whole thing was supposed to show foreign influence, but they don't look at the foreign influence when it surfaces with Hillary Clinton and the other people. Why? Because all these people were allies of Hillary Clinton and the Democrats and the deep state, so they don't look at any of that stuff. And they just continue to look into the minutia of campaign finance. There's a story on Reason Magazine talking about the campaign finance issues. And let's play a clip of President Trump as he's talking about whether he paid this, when he paid it, and so forth. Here's President Trump, video clip number 6.
Did you know about the payments?
Later on, I knew. Later on. But you have to understand, Ainsley, what he did, and they weren't taken out of campaign finance. That's a big thing. That's a much bigger thing. Did they come out of the campaign? They didn't come out of the campaign. They came from me, and I tweeted about it. You know, I don't know if you know, but I tweeted about the payments, but they didn't come out of campaign. In fact, my first question when I heard about it was, did they come out of the campaign? Because that could be a little dicey. And they didn't come out of the campaign, and that's big. But they weren't, it's not even a campaign violation. If you look at President Obama, he had a massive campaign violation, but he had a different attorney general, and they viewed it a lot different.
Yeah, he had a big campaign violation. He got a big fine. Nothing happened. Impeach Obama? We would never impeach Obama. Can't do that. Same thing happened to Edwards, and they actually tried to take him to trial. Nothing came of that either. And here's why, folks. As Reason Magazine points out, back in 2013, Antonin Scalia made a remarkable admission during oral arguments at the Supreme Court. He said, "This campaign finance law is so intricate, I can't figure it out." The Supreme Court Justice Antonin Scalia said it is so complicated, so intricate, he said, I can't figure it out. Which brings us back to the whole, and I don't know who said it, but somebody said it about, I've seen it applied to tax laws, but it applies to this as well. When the law is sufficiently complex, it's the same as having no law at all. When your tax code becomes as complex as our tax code is, when the campaign finance laws become this complex, then it's the same as having no law at all. Because nobody can really figure out what it is. So it really comes into who's got the best clout, the best judge. They can use it in public opinion. And that's what we said from the very beginning. They said, we can use this for impeachment. Well, they were going to use anything for impeachment if they get the majority. And that brings us back to why they want to shut down InfoWars and all these other conservative organizations. And we'll talk about that later. Because they want to make sure that they get a majority. Because they get a majority, they will impeach. And if they get a majority in the Senate, they will convict. And they don't have to have a reason. And it makes it very easy when the law is this complex. Reason went on and said, 3 years before Scalia said the campaign finance law is so intricate I can't figure it out, 3 years before that, a group of former Federal Election Commission chairmen, this is a group of former chairmen of the FEC, talked about this in an amicus brief that was filed in the Citizens United case. You know, that was a famous case where they said that corporations can make campaign donations and so forth. The left is still complaining about that. And I knew one of the plaintiffs that was involved in that. And they were small They were a small corporation. They were having their free speech shut down. And I have always taken the position that I think what we need is really full disclosure, because you will never stop the money. The best you can hope for is that we will know who is paying to influence people. That's the best you can hope for. In the real world, that's the best you can hope for. If you pull all the campaign financing into Washington and start handing it out to people like kids on an allowance, guess what? You know who's going to get all the money. It's going to be the establishment candidates, and it's going to be the established parties. You will never have any independents or third parties ever again. I've already seen this type of thing happen and the way that they controlled the debates and so forth. And so I don't want to see that kind of thing happen. And the way you get money out of politics is you get the power out of Washington. The money is there because the power is there. We have allowed them to usurp power and to intrude in the most minute aspects of our lives. And so it's only natural that because everything is decided by the government, and not only that, by the government in Washington, that all the money is going to flow there. It's like a big black hole of corruption. It's not a swamp. It's a black hole. And everything is getting sucked into Washington. All of our rights, all of our liberties, all the decisions about how we run our lives are being sucked into Washington, along with the money to control all of those things. And so if you want to have campaign finance reform, you got to get the power out of Washington. But these a group of former FEC chairmen said that even leaving aside specific prohibitions, the growing complexity of campaign finance law threatened free speech and political participation. Quote, there are now unique and complex rules imposed by this Federal Election Campaign Act on 71 distinct entities. And they also noted that the government had unique regulations for 33 different forms of political speech. How do you square that with the First Amendment? So the First Amendment, for all those in Hollywood, it's not about you being able to take your clothes off on film. It's not about you being able to put a crucifix in a vat of urine. The First Amendment is about political speech. It's about controversial speech. It's about the free expression of religion, which is really controversial as well. It's about all those things that everybody disagrees on. That's where you have to have your freedom of speech. But it's especially with politics. So why would we have the Federal Elections Commission and the campaign finance law involving itself and creating 71 distinct entities and putting in unique regulations for 33 different forms of political speech? It's insanity. When you have that kind of an environment, then you have created an environment where you can come after anyone that you don't like President Trump, for example. That is what's ultimately behind this. Now, when we come back, I'm going to give you some more examples of how either Jeff Sessions is not in control or he ought to be jailed. We'll be right back. I'm David Knight. That you're hearing there is from the Lynyrd Skynyrd guitarist Ed King, who just died at the age of 68. And as one person said, in terms of talking about his work, he said, if that one thing there was all that King was known for, I think that'd be worth remembering. But all of his work with Skynyrd was amazing. As a guitarist, I don't think he ever got credit for what he was due. The music he wrote really was the soundtrack of a generation. Or two. And quite frankly, I can say my sons like that music. They loved it the first time they heard it, and they heard it many times, believe me. And so that was Sweet Home Alabama, as he was talking about it. He said, well, we came to rehearsal that day. How'd that come about? Said Gary was playing the riff you hear in the verses. King told Gibson.com, guitar company, when it did an interview with him. He said, it's not the main riff that I play. It's the part that he plays. And as soon as I picked up the guitar, I immediately bounced off his riff. Hadn't been for Gary writing his part, I never would have written my part. Once I heard what Ronnie had, I just wrote the rest of the song in like a half hour. It came so fast. And so that's Ed King, dead at 68. We're talking about Alabama. We're talking about Jeff Sessions. And we all love the president. Does your conscience bother you, Jeff? maybe you should go home to your sweet home, Alabama. Would certainly like to see that happen. Before we get back to Jeff Sessions and what President Trump said, I want to tell you about the products that we sell at InfoWarsStore.com, because that's how you can stand with us. And we're all going to hang together and fight this censorship, or they will hang us all separately. Not just InfoWars, but every conservative news outlet, and they will hang the conservatives as well. Because I've got a lot of stories here on my desk about how they have throttled people's ability to be able to share information, and also throttled another institution financially with Visa and MasterCard, saying, we're not going to allow you to get any money. I just talked to the founder of BitChute a couple of days ago. I think it's 2 days ago. And he was saying, yeah, out of the clear blue sky, they pulled our ability to do payments. I've heard this from a lot of different people. This is broad corporate fascism, the merger of corporations with government to enact a political agenda. And that agenda is to censor your speech. And you can talk about whether or not the First Amendment prohibits any of this stuff on the part of these corporations. Folks, this is coming from the government. Don't you understand that? Haven't you seen the hearings, the congressional hearings, where they demand that InfoWars be taken down? You know this is coming from the Democrats. You know this is coming from George Soros and the Southern Poverty Law Center. Really? You don't know that? You don't know these people are working with them in collusion? You don't know that CNN is concerned about the fact that it's lost its audience? Yeah, it pays for its programming to be broadcast in airports and so forth, but nobody's watching them. They're very concerned about that. So they don't push back against what we have to say. They come up with slanders about us and then use that to try to shut down our entire news organization because they're desperate. That's where this is really coming from. But even if you don't understand that, are you okay with corporations deciding what you can and cannot see and hear? Are you okay with censorship if it comes from a corporation instead of from a government? I can't believe that the Democrats are so blindly partisan that they're now embracing corporate censorship. How pathetic they have become. What hypocrites they have become. When you see people on the left embracing corporate censorship, and not only that, but censorship by the biggest corporations the world has ever known. All this talk about, oh, we're so upset about Citizens United. Oh, really? But you're okay with censorship by Gulag and by Facebook. Now, that's amazing. Well, if you want to stop that, if you want to stand with us to get the news out there, you can take a look at the products that we have at InfoWarsStore.com. We've got several new products, an updated product. We have a new product, Ultimate Female Force. For women, it's a perfect combination or alternative to Super Female Vitality. It's now available at InfoWarsStore.com at an introductory price of 50% off. We have a new supplier and a new formulation of Ultimate Bone Broth that is also being reintroduced and 50% off for Ultimate Bone Broth. And finally, for our listeners, we have 20% off of Wake Up America Patriot Blend Coffee. Just use the code REALNEWS and you can get 20% off the original and immune support versions of Wake Up America Patriot Blend Coffee. And of course, that is non-GMO. It's 100% Arabica bean, 20% off with the code REALNEWS, just for our audience. Let's go back to what President Trump said about Jeff Sessions that caused the back and forth that everybody is so excited about, all the chattering talking classes. And we're talking about this, but I want you to understand that this is a problem that isn't just a personal rivalry between President Trump and Jeff Sessions. If it were, I wouldn't really care that much, quite frankly, even though I like the president. And I want to see him succeed, and he has succeeded on a lot of economic issues. I wouldn't care if this was just a personal dispute between them. But as I pointed out, this involves so many different issues. Both left and right should be upset with what is happening with the federal government. And I started out with a nonpartisan issue, the federal government moving a case and information about a bridge collapse into federal court. This is the Department of Justice. Why? So they can hide that information. Here's what President Trump had to say. Let's play the first clip about Trump saying that Jeff Sessions never took control.
Double standard. I mean, he was worse than anybody, in my opinion. He got nothing. He's a Democrat. He got nothing. The reason he got nothing, because the Dems are very strong in the Justice Department. I put an attorney general that never took control of the Justice Department, Jeff Sessions, never took control of the Justice Department. And it's a sort of an incredible thing. We have this country going so well.
That's Friday said he never took control of the Justice Department. He left all the Obama people in charge, and he left them in charge of politically persecuting the president. And then on the most tenuous basis of saying, yeah, I saw the Russian ambassador at a couple of Washington functions. I mean, what senator hasn't seen the Russian ambassador shaking his hand and so forth? He didn't have any connection with him. He didn't need to recuse himself. You remember, of course, and I'm going to talk about this later on, we had Ruth Bader Ginsburg. And she conducted a lot of homosexual weddings prior to the Supreme Court giving itself the power to decide to define what marriage is. The federal government doesn't have the authority to define marriage. People on both sides of the issue have been honest enough to say that. The federal government has no jurisdiction there. That is something to be decided by state and local government, not by the federal government. It's not enumerated. And if we understood the 10th Amendment, and if we enforced the 10th Amendment, we would understand that. But she had a lot of weddings, and now one of the couples that she married, a high-profile couple, has now been accused of drugging and raping an individual. But then you also had Elena Kagan, who was also doing that. People said, hey, you should recuse yourself, since you've already taken a very public position on this. Elena Kagan came from the Obama administration, where she was advocating for Obamacare, and the very first case that came up was Obamacare. She should have recused herself from that, but she didn't do it. So they don't play by those rules. But Jeff Sessions, who didn't have a reason to recuse himself, recused himself. And so President Trump said, well, he wasn't in control. Then he talks about loyalty. Let's play that next clip where he said, well, I picked him because he was loyal.
But when everybody sees what's going on in the Justice Department, I always put justice now with quotes. It's a very, very sad day. Jeff Sessions recused himself, which he shouldn't have done, or he should have told me. Even my enemies say that Jeff Sessions should have told you that he was going to recuse himself, and then you wouldn't have put him in. He took the job, and then he said, I'm going to recuse myself. I said, what kind of a man is this? And by the way, he was on the campaign. You know, the only reason I gave him the job, because I felt loyalty. He was an original supporter. Mm-hmm. He was on the campaign. He knows there was no collusion. And what's come out of Manafort? No collusion. What's come out of Michael Cohen? No collusion.
Yeah, they're going through and they're doing process crimes on people. Or they're going back, as we said before, they want to go back and get President Trump's, all of his financial records, because if you go back and get somebody's financial records, you can go through it with a fine-tooth comb. Financial crimes and federal election campaign crimes, as I said before, are so complex, you can get anybody if you can get the information. And that's what they're doing. They're not looking at Russian collusion or foreign influence. If they were, they'd be coming after Hillary Clinton. But Jeff Sessions immediately came back and he says, I won't be improperly influenced. Oh, really? You won't be? Well, who is improperly influencing you? And who is in charge there? President Trump went on to say, he said, the whole thing with this going on with the justice and the FBI, when you see Strzok and his lover, Lisa Page, when you see Comey and all the lies that he's told, when you see Mueller with the conflicts, yeah, it's Mueller and Comey and Rod Rosenstein who have real conflicts of interest. And President Trump said that. He's so conflicted. Comey is his best friend. He had a really nasty business transaction with me, which he never reported. I've been talking about it, but he never reports it. I mean, look at the bad thing. And I've got a couple more things I want to talk about that Jeff Sessions hasn't been involved in. And one of the things that really concerns me is not only the fact that he is not paying any attention to what's going on with the Bundy situation in Nevada, but he actually went down there at one point in time and congratulated these corrupt Obama DOJ people who are still involved in political persecution of those people. It's not just President Trump.
Broadcasting from the great state of Texas, worldwide, it's David Knight.
Welcome back. We've been talking about Jeff Sessions. The back and forth between President Trump. President Trump saying he never took charge of the Department of Justice. Jeff Sessions says, I took charge on day one. Okay, fine. Then you take responsibility for what's going on there. Here's James Dobson. Focus on the Family founder. He's also founder of the James Dobson Family Institute. He asserts that the state of Colorado is running a biased civil rights commission that exhibits hostility to people of faith. This is reported by WND.com. In July, of course, we had that case of the Colorado baker that went all the way to the Supreme Court. They made the decision in July, and they upheld the right of this small businessman to not violate his religious beliefs and be compelled to bake a custom cake for these people. He said, look, I'll sell them anything that they want to come into the store. I'll sell them any product that they want, which is more than Google will do, more than Gulag will do, more than Facebook will do, more than Visa and MasterCard will do for David Horowitz Foundation, the Freedom Center. We're going to get to that story in a minute. Why is it that the big banks and the big internet companies don't have to play by the same rules that a baker does? And of course, the people on the left, the Democrats, are saying, oh, people say private property and anything, but this is their private property. It's like Google doesn't follow their rules. They shut down a new pro. I had two channels that they shut down with one email. I'd never gotten a warning, never had a strike against me, never given an explanation, never had a video identified. They shut down two channels. 2 days later, I shut up another channel, just called The David Knight Show. I put up two videos. If they've got a three-strike policy, then how do they shut down your channel within 16 hours with just two videos? Explain that to me. Oh, they've got their rules. And of course, if you make the rules and you're the ruler, you don't have to follow the rules. That's the idea of the Democrats, and we have seen that expressed over and over again. They don't have to follow the rules. They're the rulers. It's good to be the king, as Mel Brooks said. Anyway, so he refused to bake this wedding cake for a same-sex couple because he said it violated his religious beliefs. So the Supreme Court overthrew that. And they were scolded. The state of Colorado was scolded by the Supreme Court for its, quote, hostility, unquote, towards Christians and towards this baker in particular, Phillips, for ordering him into a re-indoctrination program. How is this for cultural Marxism? You have to go to a re-education camp to accept their cultural demands. Oh, don't call it cultural Marxism. Oh, we don't like that term. I bet you don't, because it identifies exactly what you people are about. Now send somebody to a re-indoctrination program when he refused to do that. So anyway, they were called out. Now the same Colorado Civil Rights Commission, quote unquote, comes back, and he is now being attacked because another person has filed a complaint saying he wouldn't make a cake for me to celebrate my coming out as a woman. It's a man who wants to come out as a woman. And this guy says, well, I want to identify as a Christian. Is that okay? No, you can't do that because I want to identify as a woman. I'm going to force you to custom make a cake to celebrate that for me. And we've talked about this ad nauseum. The reason I bring this up is because yet they're at it again. Why isn't Jeff Sessions, I understand this is a state issue, but if he wants to get involved in what's happening in states, like he says he does with cannabis, this is clearly a case of boss hog corruption by this so-called Civil Rights Commission in Colorado. They've just been shut down by the Supreme Court for hostility to this guy and to Christians, and they do it again. So why doesn't the Department of Justice come down there and do something about this? Hello, Jeff Sessions. Anybody there? You there? Like car 54, where are you? He's still not there. This is about a lot more than the persecution of President Trump and his taking a powder on this. He has left these activist Democrats from Obama, the people who are allied with Hillary Clinton. He has left them in charge of everything. And this is how it looks. Nothing has changed. We'll be right back. I'm David Knight.
It's the real news. Live from the Infowars.com studios in Austin, Texas, it's your host, David Knight.
I've got just a couple more things I want to say about Jeff Sessions, because as I said at the top of the hour, if you're a part of the radio audience and you're listening to a news break at the top of the hour, I'll just recap briefly. We have James Dobson, founder of Focus on the Family, founder of the James Dobson Family Institute. And, of course, he's there in Colorado. And they've now come after the same Colorado Civil Rights Commission, quote-unquote, I put that in quotes, has now come after the same baker for not baking a cake now for a man who says he wants to come out as a woman. And they were just cited by the Supreme Court, not even a month after they were cited by the Supreme Court for hostility to Christians and to this baker specifically. And my producer, Jen, said, even Bill Maurer came out and said, how many bakers are there in Colorado? Can't they find somebody else to come after? Now, if Jeff Sessions, who was just speaking to a group of Christians in the last 2 weeks, talking about all the Christian persecution, where is he? Put up or shut up, Jeff. Because this is a case of persecution. It is a case of corruption at the state level. And a real Justice Department does have real jurisdiction in this type of thing. And I don't see the federal government getting in, but when they start institutionally coming after people for their religious and political beliefs, I think that's the point at which the federal government needs to come in and start raising some questions and doing some investigations. But he doesn't do anything even about that. And then let's take a look at Clive and Bundy. Because as I said, this is not about a personal grievance with the president. That would be enough, quite frankly. The fact that he took a powder on this thing, that he has allowed this thing to go without any control or oversight whatsoever. And all these guys, Rod Rosenstein, Mueller, Comey, they are all have many, many more conflicts of interest than Jeff Sessions ever had. And he won't take control of that. And that's what President Trump was saying. And this is now no longer about foreign intervention. It's no longer about collusion. This is about bring me the man, I will find the crime. It is a Stalinesque persecution. And Jeff Sessions is taking a powder on that. But he took a powder on the Stalinesque persecution of the Bundys and many other people, some of whom are still in jail, even though we had a BLM whistleblower expose the lies and the corruption of the BLM, of the FBI, which is under the Department of Justice, and of the Department of Justice prosecutors themselves, Steve Myrie and others, who are running this thing. The judge could no longer cover up for these people. She was going to be complicit in a crime herself after the BLM whistleblower came out. So she declared a mistrial, then said she was going to dismiss it with prejudice. And those Obama officials who from the very beginning, because of land use issues and because of Harry Reid and his crony capitalism and his corruption there, had been coming after the Bundys and wanted to get them locked away as terrorists. That same Department of Justice, that same Steve Myrie and others, continued now 6 months later, coming back, even after the judge said it's dismissed with prejudice. No, we want to hear this again. We want to file an appeal. We want to appeal that judge's decision and keep coming after them. Where is Jeff Sessions? Oh, that's right. He went down there and talked about how wonderful those particular prosecutors were at the time they were involved in these criminal actions. Telling the defense attorneys that they couldn't bring certain witnesses to testify on behalf of their clients. Covering up exculpatory evidence. These people need to be not only taken out of their job, these Department of Justice officials need to be put on trial themselves for these kind of crimes. That's the only way you're going to stop this kind of corruption. And Jeff Sessions, not only, he wasn't unaware of this, he embraced this. Just as I said, I think he has embraced this other stuff. When he says, I was not improperly influenced, he says, I took charge of this the first day I took office. I took control of the Department of Justice the day I was sworn in, which is why we have had unprecedented success at effectuating the president's agenda. Oh, really? Well, if you took charge of this, you took responsibility, and you should be thrown out. You should be thrown out. So what's going on with Clive and Bundy? Now, Clive and Bundy, even while they're attacking him, he hasn't stopped on the offensive either. Clive and Bundy has just filed another lawsuit against Nevada. Nevada rancher Clive and Bundy refiled a lawsuit against the governments of his home state and the county over the legality of a national monument that was established by Obama. Remember when he did this, the big land grab, or they called it the Gold Butte National Monument? December of 2016, as he was leaving office. Let's grab another couple million acres, or 100 million. I don't know how many millions of acres it was. He created the monument while Bundy was being held in federal prison. And there were some legal issues with that because he was being abused and mistreated in prison. These guys waited 2 years in prison. I talked to Ammon Bundy. If you heard that interview, you heard how they were beaten and abused and starved and put in solitary confinement. Of course, you see a lot of those same things being done to Paul Manafort, putting him in solitary confinement. I don't think he has actually been physically attacked like the Bundys were. These guys who work every day on a ranch, I mean, they're in great shape because of the physical exercise that they get. But these two guys, the way they hit Ammon Bundy, he's still having problems with his hip. They chipped the bones in his hip. Bundy filed the suit back in January. Challenging this, and so now he has refiled this. And as they point out, the Bundy trial was dismissed with prejudice in January after the judge found federal prosecutors had hidden evidence from the jury favorable to the Bundy's case. Why? Because there was an honest whistleblower in the BLM. Then back on August the 3rd, the Department of Justice, under Jeff Sessions, has now filed an appeal against this dismissal. They want to continue with this. They're taking it to the Ninth Circuit Court of Agreement. Larry Klayman, who I interviewed last couple of weeks, said this is a disgraceful inaction by Jeff Sessions, what is happening here. And it is. It is beyond disgraceful. It is criminal. He said Sessions is begrudgingly agreed to review this case after the BLM whistleblower blew the lies up. So he begrudgingly agreed to review the case. But he didn't do anything. And now he's letting Obama's Department of Justice people that he's left in charge of this, that he went down there and patted them on the head and said, what a good boy you are. Now he's letting those Obama Department of Justice people file an appeal even after we have exposed the criminal actions, the violence, the threats of violence, the assault, aiming weapons at people, threatening to shoot people who were there. I was there. They were threatening to shoot me. There was a Fox News reporter. They were threatening to shoot him. He was afraid for his life. He said that he has covered many, many different incidents, and he was never as afraid as he was there. And he was trying to get over to them. And they were threatening him. Get away. And he's like, I'm a camera. Look, I got a camera on my shoulder. And he pulled up his shirt and said, look, I don't have any weapons on me. Get away. We'll shoot you. And that was finally exposed by the BLM. But now Jeff Sessions wants to continue to come after them. The same people who are relentlessly coming after President Trump are relentlessly coming after these people at the Bundy trial. And I want to just play for you what Lindsey Graham said about this. Let's play video clip number 3.
The president's entitled to attorney general he has faith in, somebody that's qualified for the job. And I think there will come a time, sooner rather than later, where it will be time to have a new face and a fresh voice at the Department of Justice. Replacing him before the election, to me, would be a non-starter. But the idea of having a new attorney general in the first term of President Trump's administration, I think is very likely.
There is no argument that can be made for keeping Jeff Sessions in place except a political argument. And to make that political argument, here is the never-Trumper Ben Sasse essentially threatening President Trump if he were to get rid of Jeff Sessions. Here's Ben Sasse.
It would be a very, very, very bad idea to fire the attorney general because he's not executing his job as a political hack. That is not the job of the attorney general. The attorney general's job is to be faithful to the Constitution and to the rule of law.
Okay, let's just hold it right there. I have spent the last hour talking about how this guy is a do-nothing hack and how he has violated his oath of office to the Constitution, how he has betrayed people on left and right issues, even on issues that are crushing issues like collapsing bridges that have no political constituency. He needs to be removed, and people like Ben Sasse, who are jumping into this for purely political reasons, it's Ben Sasse who is the political hack, if you want to know what's going on here. We'll be right back. Welcome back. I'm David Knight. Let's take a look at what's going on in censorship right now. We had David Horowitz say that Visa and MasterCard have now cut off payments to their think tank based on a Southern Poverty Law Center report. Southern Poverty Law Center has labeled them as a hate group. How long are we going to put up with this? This is another one of the things that I said before Jeff Sessions ought to get involved with. This is racketeering and corruption of the Southern Poverty Law Center, of George Soros, And Horowitz and others are making that point now. According to Breitbart, the David Horowitz Freedom Center stated in a recent email that its ability to accept donations by credit card has been disabled by both Visa and MasterCard following a campaign by the Southern Poverty Law Center to label the Freedom Center as a hate group. And this comes shortly after Robert Spencer of Jihad Watch was forced off the funding platform Patreon following similar pressure from MasterCard. And 2 days ago, I talked to Ray Vahey, founder of BitChute, saying, yeah, we had a situation where they shut down our payments for a while as well. And it was coming from the bank. And it wasn't the same thing. It was the bank that was behind the organization that they were dealing with. I think it was Stripe, if I remember correctly, instead of Patreon or something. And so it was the bank that was behind that, saying, we're going to shut down your services. This is the kind of corporate fascism that we should really be concerned about. Why is the left so blindly partisan that they don't understand these principles? That's the question. It's going to come back to get them. And many on the left do understand this. The Socialist Workers website pointed out that this is coming from the government, and they said this is really going to hit us in the future as well. Some people do understand that. Bill Maurer understands that. But there's a difference between Democrat bots, which we have in proliferation on the internet, and I'm talking about humans, have been turned into robots for this political machine. Not the actual robots that are out there spamming people, but we have a difference between bots and people who are true liberals. I have a lot of disagreements with liberals, but I have a lot of agreements with them on civil liberties. And if they don't support civil liberties, if they don't understand the principle of free speech, they're not liberals. They are fascists. They are authoritarians. They're communists. But don't call them liberals. They stole that term anyway. It used to mean libertarian. It used to mean people who supported economic freedom as well. The liberals long ago gave up any support of private property and economic freedom. But for a while, they continued to be true believers in civil liberties, things like free speech. Now they don't support that anymore. So don't call yourself liberal. You don't support liberty or liberating people in any way, shape, or form on any issue. Find a different label. Progressive. Progressively authoritarian. Progressively statist. Progressively controlling every aspect of our life. That fits. That fits. Liberal doesn't fit you anymore. Anyway, David Horowitz said, this blow could be the end of what Freedom Center has done. Decades of work down the drain because a hateful left wants to squash free speech and silence an organization that dares to question them. Again, it's back to the essence of free speech. It was not an exact quote by Voltaire, but it was a distillation of his many writings saying that I may despise what you have to say, but I will defend to the death your right to say it. Because that is the important principle of free speech. It isn't whether or not you agree with somebody. It isn't whether or not it is controversial. That's the very speech that you have to support, or you don't have the principle. He said, we've been attacked by a left-wing hate machine whose goal is to suppress and to silence conservative voices. This is the work of a Soros-funded Media Matters and Southern Poverty Law Center operation. Exactly right. This is what we've been saying at InfoWars for a very long time. This is where it's coming from. It's coming from Soros. It's coming from the SPLC. You can see that going back to their plans that WND first published. Many other organizations have since published the minutes from the meeting that they put out in January 2017, after the election in November 2016. They came out and said, we got shellacked and we're going to win by controlling social media and silencing the voices on the right. And it was a Soros organization that called that meeting. And they called it not Media Matters, but Democracy Matters. Oh, gee, so I guess that's a completely different thing, right? No, it's a Soros organization. And Horowitz knows exactly where this is coming from. He says, this is the work of a Soros-funded Media Matters and a Southern Poverty Law Center operation. It is cynical. It is calculated. It is supported by the Democrat Party. The reason MasterCard and Visa gave us for cutting us off and thus sabotaging our online fundraising operation is that the SPLC told them that we were a hate group. And, of course, they also have an army of Antifa people out there who I guess, they've decided they're not going to get on the streets as much. Now they're going to fight people by filing bogus complaints and claims against everybody. Have enough of them do it, just sit there and, you know, filing these complaints all the time, then get people taken down. That's the other strategy that they're doing. He says it's wrong to focus on the tech heads as the culprits because they're just businessmen with a vested interest in keeping their platforms politically neutral. I disagree strongly with David Horowitz. I think he is extremely naive, and I think the GOP conservatives need to stop licking the boots of these giant corporations. Because these are the boots that are pounding him in the face, and he can't even get the backbone to criticize them. He continues to lick this. Oh, I love you, corporations. I love you. Give me a break. He says they've been threatened by Senator Mark Warner and other Democrats that if they don't censor conservatives, that they will be shut down and so forth. Look, they're not trying to be politically neutral. They share these beliefs with Mark Warner and others. They're happy to do this. They want you to see those threats so that they can pretend that they are politically neutral. I have pointed out, and I will point it out again today, that these organizations, and if you didn't realize this, if you didn't realize that Mark Zuckerberg was some figurehead that was identified by the deep state intelligence agencies as, there's a guy, he's got a little website here. Let's turn him into a multi-billionaire. We can control him. Look at that. I mean, that guy is a deer in the headlights. How many times do you have to see him testify before you realize there is nothing there? Nothing there. He is an empty suit if he actually wore a suit. He's an empty t-shirt. Let's just put it that way. And most of these little millennial billionaires that they have created are empty t-shirts that have been set into business by the CIA's venture capital firm Intutel that was created in the late 1990s to put into place what the original plan was with J.C.R. Licklider, the psychologist who was working for DARPA, who created the idea of the internet. Then they had the technological capability. They said, let's put these people in control. Let's give them control. We can use them. They'll do whatever we say. These people don't know anything. Zuckerberg doesn't know anything. He's an idiot. There's nobody home. You know, knock on the wooden head when he testifies to people. There's nobody. Don't pretend that these people are technical heads who just have their hands tied because they want to be politically neutral. No, they're happy to do the work of their Democrat master. They're happy to be their minions. They agree with us. And so do the bankers. Conservatives just can't see where this is coming.
Live from Austin, Texas, it's David Knight.
Welcome back. As many are saying, as they look at what's going on at the Southern Poverty Law Center, you know, they can see the Southern Poverty Law Center and George Soros there. I mean, they're only one level indirect. I mean, they're directly manipulating this, not even one level indirect. I am amazed, though, when I see people like John Stossel and others, as I pointed out the other day, saying, well, you know, this is just corporations and they have private property and they're independent. Or David Horowitz saying, they just want to remain neutral. That's not the case. It's not the case. It's amazing to me that they can't see beyond one level. And you don't even, in many of these cases, need to see beyond one level. Take a look at the TPP, for example. If they looked carefully at the TPP, which they continue to oppose President Trump shutting that down on day one of his administration, if they were to look at that, they would understand that that was a massive surrender of sovereignty. It wasn't free trade. They put the label free trade on there and they go, oh, free trade. Well, I like free trade. Okay, well, then that's a good thing. No, look at the document. Read it. Look, see what it's about. See who's going to be controlling this. I mean, if you're going to run a think tank, if you're going to be a reporter, if you're going to be a journalist, you need to read this stuff and get beyond the labels and the headlines. I support free trade. But what we have is not free trade. Ron Paul said that about the North American Free Trade Agreement. He said this is not free trade. It's thousands of pages of regulation. It is managed trade. The question is, who's going to be managing that trade? It's not going to be us. It's going to be some third party that is unaccountable to us, unelected by us. It's going to be managing that trade. It is not free trade. Nevertheless, you have the Cato Institute that many of these people, you know, love, and these conservative organizations that are out there saying, well, we like free trade and President Trump is against free trade. We haven't had free trade in a very long time. We've had a trade war conducted against us by the Chinese and to a lesser degree by the European Union. And that's what happens when you have trade tariffs that are 10 to 1 in advantage of China. They charge us 10 times the amount of money on cars that we sell to them as we do on cars coming to us from Chinese factories. 10 times. And with the EU, it's 4 times. So don't tell me that we have free trade. That's not free trade. That is sucker trade. And President Trump is right when he calls it that. And so when they look at this type of situation, they can see the Southern Poverty Law Center because they're the ones directly doing it. They can see George Soros because they've seen the memo now with his Democracy Matters meeting in January 2017. They know that this is coming from him. And that's good. Because in the past, we'd be labeled conspiracy theorists. Well, you know what? There are a lot of conspiracies out there. They now see the conspiracy between the Democrat Party and George Soros and the Southern Poverty Law Center. They now see that conspiracy. There are some conspiracies that are bigger than the left wing. There are some conspiracies that are bigger than the Democrat Party. As a matter of fact, these globalist conspiracies include people from both parties. It includes a lot of Republicans, a lot of neocons that are in there as well. And I don't know why these people won't talk about it. Either they're too stupid to see it, or they're complicit in it because they want the support and the access to these people. I don't care. I don't care. I'm not here to get access to anybody. I don't need access to a GOP Republican or a Democrat Republican to tell you what's going on. I can do my own research. I can quote them. I can comment on them. I don't need them to come on my show and make me look good. That's what Fox News does. That's what CNN does. And they compromise what they will tell you so that they can keep their access to these Democrats and Republicans who are subverting this country and our Constitution. I don't care. I'm not going to support them if they do that. I'm not going to support President Trump when he does the wrong thing either. Certainly no, he's not going to come on my show. So that's fine. I don't care. This is getting serious. It won't stop with David Horowitz or me, says Robert Spencer. The left is moving quickly to silence all dissenting voices in the run-up to the 2018 elections. And let me tell you how Soros is doing that as well. I've reported on this many, many times, how immediately after Obama left office, he brought in Eric Holder and they said, we're going to get involved in the Attorney General side of things. We're going to get involved in the Justice Department, make sure we win elections and those particular offices. Why? Because under Obama, they had lost over 1,000 positions across this country, the Democrats had, because of Obama. As I've said before, North Carolina, reliably Democrat since Reconstruction, because that was such a horrible thing. And of course, nobody talks about the history of Reconstruction. Nobody talks about that. You won't have anybody talking about that in college or high school or anything. Nobody talks about Reconstruction. And there's very few people who remember that. Some of us do. I did my own research, but we have a family memory of what happened during Reconstruction if you lived in the South. And my family goes back to Florida for generations before it was a state. But anyway, so we knew what happened in Reconstruction, and that's why it damaged the reputation of Republicans so badly that many people in the South wouldn't even consider voting for Republicans until Ronald Reagan. But that still hadn't been the case in North Carolina. The Democrats still controlled everything since Reconstruction until Barack Obama. They voted for Barack Obama in 2008. By 2010, it went all Republican, except for the few congressional seats, because they were rigged by gerrymandering the districts. And that's just one example of how they lost at the ballot box because of Obama. So when Obama gets out and Trump goes in, Obama gets with Eric Holder and says, we're going to get into the legal side of things. We're going to focus on attorney general races. Well, what did they do? It's George Soros who is actually putting up the money for this plan. It's the plan of Obama working with Eric Holder, but the money is coming from George Soros, just as we see with these other things. George Soros has spent millions of dollars for attorney general races, some of them statewide, some of them local, here in Texas and in California. Multiple attorney general, just local attorney generals, he spent millions of dollars to get these people elected, and he lost all of them but one in the spring. So it hasn't worked out too well for him even there. But when you go into a race, when you try to throw out a sheriff or you try to throw out an attorney general and you go into a local election and you spend millions of dollars, you usually can win. Except that he's got such obviously corrupt people that are so out of touch with what the voters in those local communities want. And so it really hasn't served him well. But he's been trying to do that as well. I mean, when you look at what's going on with Keith Ellison in Minnesota, in spite of the ethical issues that he's got there, he's got a big base of support in the Muslim community, the Somalis who've come into Minneapolis. That's where his congressional support is. He's trying to run for statewide office. He's got a big support from George Soros and Obama and Eric Holder and the Democrat Party to do that. Because they know that they can't win the broader election. So they will sue people in the courts and try to hold up the situations there. And they know they've got enough judges left in place that they can make that work. And so, yeah, he is there. He is there, and they're trying that kind of tactic. They go on, as reported by WND. They said, for years, the Southern Poverty Law Center has labeled the Freedom Center, this is David Horowitz's place, a hate group, and tried to get organizations like Amazon, Facebook, and Twitter to ban us, to silence our message. Yesterday, the SPLC finally convicted MasterCard and Visa to cut us off. Yeah, MasterCard and Visa should be convicted. This is the kind of collusion that Jeff Sessions ought to be looking into. There is nothing there in terms of Russian foreign collusion. There is plenty of corporate collusion to rig our election that is happening right now publicly under our noses, and Jeff Sessions isn't doing anything about this. I mean, this is collusion by the biggest corporations the world has ever seen. Jeff Sessions isn't doing anything about that. Why? Why isn't the president doing anything about this? Why aren't the Republicans doing anything about this? They're going to be the ones who are losing seats. This is collusion, corporate collusion. Forget Citizens United. I mean, this is much bigger than anything like that. This is far bigger than that. It says, now we can't process donations from any major credit card companies. Robert Spencer said, the freedom of speech is the foundation of a free society. It is rapidly being destroyed in the United States. Not only are Horowitz and me and Alex Jones and Dennis Prager and Gavin McGinnis being silenced, with this credit card action, they're trying to make sure that we can't make a living and will be quite literally destroyed personally as well as professionally. Again, I set up a channel that Gulag shut down in 16 hours. I had two videos up. I didn't get three strikes there. They're coming after us personally. They're trying to ban us personally. It's the same thing they did in China for the communist dictator there. The Chinese take them off the street. They take them off the internet. Welcome back. I'm David Knight. We're just talking about what the Southern Poverty Law Center has been able to do, along with George Soros, shutting off MasterCard and Visa being processed by David Horowitz's organization's think tank. And this is something that has been done to other individuals, cutting it off at the financial level. We have seen banks do this. When I was talking to BitChute founder Ray Vahey, and he was saying, hey, we had the same thing done to us. They shut off our financial processing. I said, we've seen them do this for people who sell guns. We've seen the banks come in and use their political clout, their financial clout, to affect politics. This is far worse, folks, than having a situation. The left, as I said before, got very upset about Citizens United. That was a case, one of the guy that I knew was coming out of, it was Montana, I believe. It was Western State, Montana, Wyoming. They wanted to be able to speak, and they had their speech shut down. The Supreme Court overturned that restriction, and I'm in favor of that. I want to know who is behind this stuff. It took us a while to uncover that memo from George Soros and uncover what the Southern Poverty Law Center is, but I think it's important to know who is financially behind these kinds of lobbying issues. But it's a different thing when the corporation comes out and puts money down and says, here's what we're doing and we're lobbying for this. And then you can look at that and say, I don't like that. I don't want to deal with these people. Well, good luck if it's the only people that control the internet or if it's the only people who control the banking industry. You're not going to deal with Visa and MasterCard. What are you going to do? There's not that many alternatives out there. And when these people are behind the scenes, cutting people off and using their financial clout, their corporate clout, to work with their political allies, that is fascism. It is the merger of corporations and governments. Where are the anti-fascists? Oh, they're out there applauding this and helping it to move along. And what types of things, of course, have we been seeing the Southern Poverty Law Center do? Well, you remember that they just recently had a $3 million settlement because they had labeled some people who were formerly Muslims. They started talking about some of the jihadis and so forth. They labeled them incorrectly as a hate organization, and they gave up in court, paid them over $3 million. But they have also come after many Christian organizations. Matt Staver, who is founder and chairman of Liberty Council, a Christian nonprofit, said that there's leaders of over 60 Christian organizations that the Southern Poverty Law Center has falsely labeled as hate organizations. They have planned a massive legal response that could be 60 separate lawsuits. He made it very clear this is not a class action lawsuit. These are going to be individual lawsuits. Why? Because you had situations like on the advice of Southern Poverty Law Center, they said these are Christian organizations. They said they're hate groups. And so GuideStar, which identifies and rates charities, said, oh, don't give money to these people. They're hate groups, based on the labeling of the Southern Poverty Law Center. And so they had their funding taken away because of that. And so that has already happened as well. So these people said they're going to sue. Why are they labeled as hate groups? Well, because they support biblical sexuality, because they support traditional marriage. That's all it takes to have the Southern Poverty Law Center call you a hate group. And if you are conservative politically, they will label you a racist, of course. And so I qualify for both of those. I qualify for being a hateful person because I support traditional marriage and sexuality and Christian values. And because I'm a conservative, that makes me a racist. In 2012, Floyd Corkins chose the headquarters of the Family Research Council to target, to try to kill people there. Why? Because the Southern Poverty Law Center labeled that Christian group a hate group. So he tried to kill people there. He was stopped before that happened. However, James Hodgkinson was also inspired by the SPLC to open fire on Republican congressmen. That was when Steve Scalise was so severely wounded. So why doesn't Jeff Sessions and the Department of Justice do something about the Southern Poverty Law Center that is out there acting like some kind of a racketeering group, inciting violence against congressmen, against traditional Christian churches and groups? Why isn't he doing something about them? They're now moving against news organizations. They're now moving against think tanks and trying to shut down political speech. Why isn't the Department of Justice doing something about them, about Media Matters, about the Southern Poverty Law Center? Instead, you find that the Southern Poverty Law Center and Media Matters and others are now the fact checkers for people like Facebook. And so you have Facebook censoring a New York Post article on why Trump supporters will vote for him in 2020, regardless of these criminal charges that are out there by Michael Cohen and Paul Manafort. Of course, the criminal charges for Manafort are for things, again, going into the weeds of financial things. I don't know if Manafort cheated on taxes or whatever, but if he did, that was years before he went to work for President Trump. And he was still advising people on both sides of the political aisle. And nobody knew anything about that. And nobody would know anything about that, according to the judge. The judge was very upset with Manafort, Mueller. Saying we wouldn't even be having this discussion if he hadn't been working for President Trump. And the judge knows exactly what Mueller was trying to do, trying to rack up financial crimes against Manafort, hoping that he would turn against President Trump, which is what Michael Cohen did do. And so you got a New York Post reporter, Selena Zito, wrote an op-ed piece, and Facebook removed it. She said, this is interesting. She tweeted out, Facebook has now taken down my post of my reporting. I've received 9 separate messages from readers telling me the same thing happened to them. And then an update to that. She said, well, here's an update. The original post, they restored that, but no response to any of my questions. They sent her an automated explanation. We have removed this post because it looks like spam and doesn't follow our community standards. Well, I'm glad they restored her article, and I'm glad they stopped censoring it on Facebook. But that kind of vague, automated explanation is what I got from Gulag. When YouTube deleted two channels of mine, one of them at this show just before the one-year anniversary, they deleted about 1,500 videos that were up there. They deleted many, many more on a channel that I'd had here for the previous 5 years working at InfoWars. None of those had ever had any strikes against them. And I got no explanation, and I still have had no explanation. I filed an appeal. They have ignored that. I have over and over again tweeted to Team YouTube, hoping that I could get some humans there to respond. Of course, they responded immediately when H3H3 was shut down in the middle of their broadcast because they had the audacity to mention Alex Jones's name. They got an automated takedown and a strike put against them. They weren't able to live broadcast. And then when they said, whoa, this is amazing, I guess maybe he was right. They were defending YouTube. And they said, well, I guess he was right. I guess there is a conspiracy to silence him. And then Team YouTube, the humans, got it. Well, we're looking into this. And within an hour, they said, we've restored that. We've taken that. That was a mistake. But it was automated censorship. And I have gotten nothing but automated responses. I tweeted it out again today. I finally got a response from YouTube on Twitter saying, we're going to take a look into this. Did you file an appeal? I said, I did 2 weeks ago. And you never gave me a response. And I have tweeted to you many times publicly. And all I get is a complaint was received. And we have terminated your channel. They did that immediately, and I didn't get another email message. I started complaining about it immediately to them on Twitter. I didn't get another response from them for another 6 hours, and then I get something for the last 2 weeks every 10 to 15 minutes, an automated bot. And so finally, I tweeted out something today. I said, if you're not going to do anything about it, stop spamming me. I'm not annoyed by it anymore. It doesn't go into my inbox. I have set up a filter to filter out that message because it's the same message being sent to me over and over again. I need to file some, is there some place that I can file a complaint about people spamming me? that's what Google is doing right now. They said in the aftermath of Tuesday's news that both former Trump campaign manager Paul Manafort and his lawyer Michael Cohen were found on the wrong side of the law in separate court cases. This is what she wrote. This is what was taken down by Facebook. She wrote, the question asked most frequently by the press, Democrats, and never Trump Republicans is, where do Trump voters go now? And she wrote in her New York Post piece, the answer is the same that's always been since they first started asking it, November the 9th, 2016. They go with Trump. And so because of that, Facebook said, this looks like spam. And they took it down. And they took it down whenever anybody else had posted up there. She also had a conversation with a woman in her mid-40s who had voted for Trump in 2016, still supports him. And she said, for decades, I've been inspired by aspiring politicians and elected officials who took to the podium or the camera and they delivered poetic speeches to earn my trust and my support. And they would sway me with expressive words and artfully delivered promises. It took me a while to realize that wasn't their words. That's the same thing I said to Megyn Kelly when she was here. I said, you know what? Trump can be pretty rough and crude, but he's authentic, and that means something.
Waging war on corruption, it's David Knight.
You know, it's kind of interesting. This article that was taken down by the New York, it was a New York Post author. The reporter's name is Selena Zito. And it was repeatedly taken down by Facebook. And I think I see why. It wasn't that it looked like spam. It looked like a very effective article because she was talking about the fact that Trump voters weren't going to leave Trump over these trumped-up charges by Mueller. And one of the ladies that she talked to in her mid-40s, again, I mentioned that. She said, you know, for decades she'd heard all these politicians and their wonderful speeches. And she said, I realized it wasn't their words. And I realized that they weren't doing anything. And then she went on to say, well, you know, I like the fact that we had this tax reform bill. I like what he's doing with the judiciary. I like the repeal of regulations because economic conditions have gotten a lot better here in Ohio. She said, I like his Supreme Court picks. And she said, I like the way that he's taking on the establishment wings of both parties. And this is the way Selena Zito summed it up. She said, the press takes him literally, but not seriously. His supporters take him seriously, but not literally. That's a great quote. That is a great quote. The press takes Trump literally, but not seriously. His supporters take him seriously, but not literally. We don't really care about all the rough, crude language because I like the things that he's done with the economy. And I like the fact that he's authentic. And I like the fact that he's taking on the establishment. Even if all that comes of this is to expose these people for the criminals and the frauds that they are. And like I said, as we're going to the break, that's exactly what I told Megyn Kelly. You agree with what he said about this or that? And I said, yeah, I am sick and tired of the politicians and their carefully crafted read speeches. But of course, Megyn Kelly does that for a living. She has somebody write the stuff for her and she reads it off of a teleprompter. And I prefer people who tell you what they think. And I prefer that even if I disagree with them on some issues. And these people do as well. His supporters take him seriously, but not literally. It's kind of interesting. We've got a big race here in Texas. We have Ted Cruz, and it is a close race. Ted Cruz has actually come out and supported the idea of freedom of speech. Imagine that. The only person that I have seen besides President Trump who later on came out and supported freedom of speech and said, look, we can handle the fake news, but I don't want to see news organizations taken down. He says, I'll criticize CNN for fake news, but I don't want to see even CNN taken down. And I don't either. They are a source of endless material and amusement for us. And you don't have to watch them. I'll tell you the crazy stuff that they do. But it's amazing to me the silence that I've seen from conservatives and libertarians in Congress. The House Freedom Caucus has not said anything about this corporate censorship, this fascist censorship that is a conjunction of Soros, the SPLC, the Democrat Party, and the big corporations that control the internet, that have been given control of the internet by the intelligence communities. They're not talking about that. Ted Cruz came out and said, hey, look, you know, I don't like Alex Jones. He said some things about my dad that I really don't like, but what happened is wrong there. And he's saying that because he's in a very tight race against Beto O'Rourke. So you have Ted Cruz and Beto O'Rourke, the Democrat. And I think it's interesting that both of them have one name that is Hispanic and another name that is English. And they go with whichever name is Hispanic on their sign. So you have Beto versus Cruz, not Ted versus O'Rourke. And I'll tell you something that has come out with O'Rourke, which is not getting any traction from mainstream media. Surprise, surprise, surprise. Something that came out about Beto O'Rourke. He's got a history that they don't want you to know about. And I'll tell you about that when we come back. Stay with us. David Knight. Kind of interesting what is happening in the Democrat Party. There's a headline from NTK Network. Once loyal Democrats have turned on the DNC. One guy says, I blame them for what happened in 2016. Yes, that's what happened. It was the DNC and it was Hillary Clinton. That's the answer to the rhetorical question that Hillary Clinton had. What happened? She said. Well, of course, Alex Jones and InfoWars got three honorable mentions in her book as to things that happened to Hillary Clinton. But it was largely a self-inflicted wound. And it was all of this hacking of the election and this Russian conspiracy theory was a self-inflicted wound. It was a reaction by the grassroots and the people inside the campaign, the Bernie Sanders supporters within the DNC, who exposed that. They were the ones who leaked that information. We just had Julian Assange's mom put that out again. And then people said, look, she's talking about Seth Rich. And she said, I'm not talking about Seth Rich. I'm talking about the UK ambassador who said, I went to the United States to get this information from a whistleblower, and they handed it to me. And she said it was also this group that William Binney is with. It's something like Veterans for Security or something like that. William Binney and others showed that if you look at the files, you could tell that there was no way possible for them to have been taken over the internet. They had to have been copied by, if you look at the timestamps on them, they had to, the amount of time that it took to transfer that data, it had to have been done by putting it on a thumb drive, which is consistent with what was said from the very beginning by WikiLeaks. It was an inside whistleblower, whether it was Seth Rich or somebody else, it was an inside whistleblower. The comments by Julian Assange made it sound like it was Seth Rich and that one interview that he had. Nevertheless, I'm not going to get caught up on that. It was an inside whistleblower. And it was a Hillary Clinton contractor, CrowdStrike, who said it was the Russians who did it. And you can't look at the servers, FBI. Sorry, you can't have that. That's privileged. Just like you can't, we're not going to show you the emails. Hillary Clinton's lawyer will go through the emails and tell you which ones are relevant if you want to do an investigation. We will vet that for you first. And so people are fed up with that kind of corruption. They're fed up with the superdelegates. They're fed up with the fact that Hillary Clinton bought the bankrupt DNC before the election. There were millions of dollars in debt, and she was flush with cash from her criminal foundation. And so she bought them. And so as they're pointing out here, after years of mismanagement under former chair Debbie Wasserman Schultz, and of course, this goes back to what I talked about at the beginning of the program, Imran Awan is getting a free pass by Jeff Sessions' Justice Department. Forget about the theft of equipment. Forget about the fraud. Forget about the espionage issues. Not going to investigate that. Not going to look at that. Poor fellow, he's suffered enough. Let's just let him go. And that was all under Debbie Wasserman Schultz, not just the DNC stuff. So they're also not impressed with the new chair, Tom Perez. So McClatchy ran a story yesterday. They went around talking to big donor Democrats, and they asked him, what do you think about this? One guy who's a New York real estate developer says he hasn't even been asked to donate in the 2018 cycle. That's how disorganized they are. He has given $600,000 to Democrat candidates and other groups in this cycle. But the DNC hasn't asked him for any money. He says you kind of don't even think about him, especially if nobody asks you. Another guy says, well, I blame them for the defeat of 2016. Another guy says, I think they're failing to engage grassroots folks who have the capacity to fund them. But then you take a look at the candidates that they're running, like here in Texas. As I was saying at the top of the hour, we got a lot of money being channeled to Beto O'Rourke here in Texas to challenge Ted Cruz for Senate. And so PolitiFact looked into his background, and this is kind of interesting. They found that he's been arrested twice, once for burglary and another time for driving while intoxicated. But it's no problem because, you know, it's just a misunderstanding. And some of these people, like Ted Kennedy, just get a pass. Oh, I'm sorry, you drove that car off the bridge and the lady... And you swam away and left her to die? Oh, that's okay. You're a Kennedy. You're a Democrat. We like you. You get a pass. And so Beto O'Rourke, he was just a young, reckless college student driving drunk and burglarizing places. But that's okay, because now you're going to put him in charge of making all the rules that run every little aspect of your life because you don't like Ted Cruz. And you're going to see the same type of thing happen that happened in Alabama if that goes through. This is a guy who supports every big government socialist program that is out there. There's a lot of things I don't like about Ted Cruz. But you have to look at a situation and say, well, do I want to go with a guy that I disagree with on half of the time? Or do I want to go with somebody that I disagree with 100% of the time? Is the glass half full or is it totally empty? That's the kind of thing that's coming up. So this guy, Beto O'Rourke, it'll be interesting to see if anybody talks about his arrest record. While we're talking about arrests, we've got a detective, and this was in South Africa. We're talking about different aspects of South Africa, and this was with the former government. This was not the current racist, murdering, thieving, communist Marxists that are there right now who say, we're going to steal the land from the white farmers because they're privileged. And they don't deserve it. And we had that long discussion yesterday with Simon Roche. But then saying, well, we're going to do it legally. We'll change the Constitution. As I said, what if they take any of your other rights and say, well, you know, free speech is a privilege. That's what we're hearing from the left now. Well, it's a privilege. And it's a privilege that we have now given to the biggest corporations to decide whether or not you are going to be allowed to exercise that privilege. Censorship is censorship. And we don't get our rights from a piece of paper called a Constitution. People in South Africa are starting to learn that right now. We've got Democrats who are out there saying, publicly saying, we need to get rid of the Second Amendment. Well, if you get rid of the Second Amendment, you still don't get rid of my basic human rights to protect myself. You just have made yourself a government that is illegitimate. Because we understand in this country that governments are instituted to protect our human rights that we possess as human beings. The natural rights that we get from God, our life, our liberties. And if you are the kind of government that takes those rights and those liberties with a piece of paper, then you are the kind of government that we can alter or abolish or overthrow. And we will do so. And we must do so if you take those rights, because they're not privileges and they aren't granted to us by the First Amendment or by the Second Amendment. But anyway, going to this situation in South Africa, this was the apartheid government. This is a guy who was a former police detective. It's reported by Free Thought Project. He authored a bombshell book that exposed a massive pedophile ring made up of high-level government officials. And he was found shot dead last week, shortly after he released the book exposing high-level government pedophilia rings. This is something that is much bigger, as I've said. When we talk about this, I talked to Leo Zagami about what's going on in the Catholic Church. This is much bigger than any institution, but it does involve the people who are at the highest levels of all of these most powerful institutions, especially the government institutions. And you can see it here in this particular case. Mark Minnie, author of the controversial book, The Lost Boys of Bird Island, devoted his post-police life to exposing corruption and the horrifying pedophilia that he discovered while he worked as a detective over and over again. We see these detectives, like the ones at Scotland Yard, who found out the fact that Jimmy Savile was a serial pedophile. They would start an investigation, would get shut down by the people that were higher up at Scotland Yard. Then you had, after he died, reporters at the BBC do a documentary showing what had happened with that. And then that documentary was spiked. Why? Because he had big connections in government and with the royal family. And the same thing is happening here, even in South Africa. It happens in every single country. And so he had sent messages to his family. He said, I've got people who are after me. I will never kill myself. If I'm found dead, you will know that I have been murdered. Investigate that murder. And then he was found shot dead shortly after that. This is what's going to happen. It is what is happening everywhere when these people get close to the truth. They will either kill you or they will assassinate your character. We'll be right back. A free ride. That's what the socialists promised. Come on, let's have a free ride. Ocasio-Cortez. Visiting the restaurant that has been closed by her policies of free rides. You just need a higher minimum wage. Well, that's what closed this restaurant. So she's making a big deal about how, look, I'm just a common working person here. I went by to see my former fellow employees at this coffee shop that I used to work at. It's called The Coffee Shop. It's a Union Square icon for years. She wanted to emphasize her familiarity with the lies of everyday workers, reports the Free Beacon. She said, the restaurant I used to work at is closing its doors. I believe we can have a better future. You can do it too. We all can. We just need to raise our minimum wages here. Well, the problem is her former employers have said that's the reason they closed. They said it's higher rent in New York City along with higher minimum wage. They used to have 150 employees there. And they're now all losing their jobs because they can't keep up with the higher rent and the higher minimum wage. They said the rents are very high, and now the minimum wage is going up. And we have a huge number of employees, 150. Now, typically what happens is most businesses, if they can stay in business, and they have the minimum wage arbitrarily raised on them by socialists like Ocasio-Cortez, they will fire some people and try to stay afloat. But because the rent is high, they're just firing everybody with those two things. Now, she's campaigning, of course, for the $15 an hour minimum wage, which is double what it is nationally, more than double. Nationally, it's $7.25. And she defends that by saying the fact that people that paying people enough to live is considered to be a radical far-left position says more about the current state of our nation's politics than it does about mine. No, what it says is that you don't understand the economics that are playing out right in front of your eyes in Venezuela. I've talked about this many times, just this last week. Of course, she still doesn't understand. Just this last week, they did the same thing that Democrats and Republicans love to do. They love to add more zeros to the currency. They just don't want to do it as quickly as it happened in Venezuela, because in Venezuela it got out of control. So it was inflating so quickly in hyperinflation that they lopped off five zeros, and then they gave people a minimum wage that was 60 times higher, not two times higher like Ocasio-Cortez is doing, but 60 times higher. So why aren't those people wealthy? Why didn't that work? Again, why limit it to two times, Cortez? Make it 60 times. It works so well for the people in Venezuela. And as I reported yesterday, the day after they did these, you know, chop off zeros on the currency and add zeros to the paycheck of people, they still can't afford anything. The economy is broken because it can't be micromanaged by central planners. That's the fundamental problem with all of this. And so the guy that they talked about, the waiter who's 29 years old, he goes to the ATM and he tries to take out money, but he finds that the maximum amount that the machine will dispense is 15 cents. 15 cents. So take that 15 cents and compare that to your $15 an hour. And there's your stack of currency, Venezuelan total bolivar, all the bolivars that it takes to get some eggs or a tomato or a roll of toilet paper. Just crazy stuff. But of course, these are the policies, the radical far left, ignorant policies of Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez and her millennial socialists that are now being embraced by the DNC. Not going to go anywhere. Hopefully it's not going to go anywhere. We got Rand Paul, meanwhile, filing an amendment to defund Planned Parenthood. He said one of the top priorities for a Republican Congress that professes pro-life values on the campaign trail should be to stop taxpayer funding for abortion providers, but they haven't done that. What does that tell you? You know, I can remember, it's been years now, I can remember when I had a heated discussion with somebody who really got angry with me at church, and she would not talk to me anymore after that because I wasn't going to support George W. Bush. You have to support him. You have to support him. We got a Rand Paul clip here, and I'll play that for you in just a second, but she was saying, you have to support him because he's pro-life. And I said, look, even a pro-abortion libertarian would stop taxpayer funding of abortions, which is more than the so-called pro-life Republicans will do. The pro-life Republicans won't stop funding Planned Parenthood. And I said, it is off the table, as far as I'm concerned, about making that the deciding issue between the Republicans and the Democrats, because the Republicans always talk about this and they never do it. And that's what Rand Paul is saying. And then later on, I learned that it was the Bush family, the patron of the family, who had been one of the founders of Planned Parenthood with Margaret Sanger when they were working to make it a eugenics organization that was going to shut down the black people because we had too many black people. And he was a treasurer, Prescott Bush. And of course, George H.W. Bush had connections to Planned Parenthood as well. It is a total fraud. They go out there and they tell you that they're pro-life while they are part of that organization. That is how phony this all is. Let's play that Rand Paul clip.
Everybody knows that Democrats love abortion and Planned Parenthood more than life itself. But Republicans, many voters think that Republicans actually care about the unborn. Many voters think Republicans are really opposed to government-funded abortions. But the dirty little secret is that Republican leadership is blocking my amendment to defund Planned Parenthood. That's right. The Republican leadership has filled the amendment tree to block my defund Planned Parenthood amendment.
Mitch McConnell, can
that be? Surely Republican leadership doesn't favor abortion funding? The answer is a curious one. The truth is that Republican leadership favors bloated government spending more than they care about Planned Parenthood. This appropriations bill before us exceeds the spending caps by nearly $100 billion. Big spending Republicans fear that blocking funding for Planned Parenthood would derail their plans to greatly expand the welfare warfare state. So be it. The public has long known that Democrats are the abortion party. Now the public will know that many Republicans just give lip service to pro-life issues and really are more concerned with bloated government spending than saving lives. Of the 320,000 babies that Planned Parenthood will abort this year, about 6,400 of these babies would be geniuses. They would develop into geniuses if they were allowed to live. Perhaps one of these potential geniuses would have discovered a cure for cancer or Lou Gehrig's disease.
All right, we're going to stop it there because we're about out of time. But that's a conversation almost verbatim that I had with my Christian friend 20 years ago. I said, you got to stop looking at what people say and look at what they do. We've been deceived for too long by the Bushes and by the establishment Republicans telling us that they're pro-life. And I'm glad that Rand Paul is calling them out on this hypocrisy because they want to fund their warfare, welfare state. That's exactly right. Exactly right. Real quickly, I just want to remind you of the sales that we have at InfoWarsStore.com. Very important that you support what we're doing here or we won't be here. We have a couple of new products. We have a new formulation of Ultimate Bone Broth, 50% off. We have a new product, the Ultimate Female Force. Take a look at InfoWarsStore.com. Find out what that's about. It's now 50% off as an introductory price. And you can save 20% on our Wake Up America Patriot Blend Coffee, either original or immune support. Just use the code REALNEWS, just for our audience. Real News to save 20% off of coffee.
Sense common again. It's your host, David Knight.
Let's talk about technology and freedom for a little bit. Now, I began this broadcast by talking about the Department of Justice working to cover up an accident with a bridge that collapsed on people who were parked in their cars, crushed six people to death in their cars in Florida, close to Florida International University. A state judge said that information needs to be made public. We need to know what happened, why that happened. We don't want that to happen again. The federal government comes in, the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration, the board, NHTSA, we always say, or NTSB, comes in and says, no, we don't want that information to come out. And so now they got the Department of Justice, the U.S. Attorney's Office for the Northern District of Florida, said it would ask a federal judge to quash that state court or ruling that would order that information to be made public and to keep it secret. Why would you do that? Then this highlights, I think, a couple of different things. Number one, it highlights the ineffectiveness of Jeff Sessions and his Department of Justice. It highlights his unwillingness or inability to purge the people out of government, out of his department, that are not only highly partisan, but are bureaucrats who are just there to cover their butts. And this is a climate that, as I said, we have seen this at every level of government, from the top to the bottom. Nobody will talk to you about anything anymore. Everything is a national secret. Not going to tell you anything. Not going to talk to the press. You got to sue them to get any information. That's why Judicial Watch is at the center of this. Every time they ask under the Freedom of Information Act for information, they're denied that information. They then have to go through a lengthy lawsuit to get any information about what is going on by anything that the government is doing. Why is this a partisan issue? Why would this be something that had to be covered up by the government? And this is the same NTSB that is allowing self-driving cars to experiment with your life and the life of your family on the highway. They are conducting their live experiments on the highway without your informed consent. And that should not be allowed. But of course, this is the safety board that is doing this. Always about safety. Look at how much money they have added to the price of a car. How much they've added to that with all the safety devices. How much weight has that added that causes the fuel economy to go down because of all these mandated safety devices? Had this discussion many times with Eric Peters of epautos.com. One of my favorite reporters, because he focuses on a very important aspect of liberty, and that is your ability to move around freely. Mark Moreno of Climate Depot republishes a New Republic magazine article saying that the modern automobile must die. The car must die. And of course, they've been saying this for the longest time. They hate the fact that you have anonymity and freedom of transportation. That must be stopped. They've got the TSA rolling out their scanners on the subways in LA. They're going to be doing this everywhere, but it gets down to the point where it really is about your freedom. And even in this article where they talk about the fact that the modern car must die, why must it die? Well, it's because we've got to save the planet and the environment from all these mysterious gases, these unicorn farts that come out of it. And of course, it's going to mean that you can't generate this power, this renewable power, if you don't have some kind of massive storage device, which they haven't developed yet. The technology is not there. You know, in Ireland, they put up these massive wind farms. And what happened was the power was cycling up and down as the wind would cycle up and down. So they said, well, let's stretch that out over a larger area. And they stretch it out all the way up the coast of Ireland. And they just wound up with bigger peaks and valleys. It didn't even it out at all. And so it has to be stored somewhere. And you can't do that very well on a power grid. They want to maintain centralized control of our electricity. See, it could work if we had decentralized control. You could have renewable resources if you have your local battery that is set up at your home. That could work. But they have to maintain central control. So they have to have a central power grid. And that doesn't work because then they have to centrally store all of that electricity for the hours when the renewable power sources aren't working. So you wind up, instead of having internal combustion engines, you have external combustion engines. And that's okay because the left doesn't see all the unicorn farts that are coming out of the power supply company. Because if you ask people, what is your favorite source of energy? They will say electricity. Most people will say that. That is not a source of energy. Electricity is not a source of energy, except to you as a consumer. Electricity is an end product of energy. That energy comes from oil or gas or nuclear power or solar or whatever, but it is an end product of that. But as they're talking about in this New Republic magazine, they get to the issue. They talk about freedom in here, which is really surprising. They said, to American eyes, Germany may look like a public transit paradise, but the country also has a flourishing car culture that began over 100 years ago and has only grown since then. Yeah, the first car was the Mercedes. Behind Japan and the United States, Germany is the third largest automobile manufacturer in the world. BMW, Audi, Mercedes, Volkswagen. Yeah, even though they have put tens of billions of dollars against Volkswagen and locked up executives for things that never harmed anybody, trying to put them out of business because they had the audacity to make fuel-efficient and reliable diesel engines. They said there is no other industry as important to Germany's economy. And they said a similar thing happens in the United States, and this is what they had to say. Affluence. Think about what the car means to you. Affluence. Capability for individual expression. Personal freedom. I would add to that privacy. The fact that you don't have to get into a cattle car, but you can get into your own car, which is private. You can listen to your own music. You can have some quiet time in your own car. Freedom is not a selling point that should easily be dismissed, wrote one individual back in the Atlantic. Think about that. Freedom is not a selling point that you should just ignore. And that's why I talk about this so much. It really is about your individual freedom. And that is why the Democrats, the central planners, the socialists, the urban planners have been so adamant that they're going to take away those private vehicles from you. You know, the guy who was the CEO for Lyft wrote a very, very long article because he used to be an urban planner. And this Lyft CEO's fundamental idea is that cities are wonderful and cars must be destroyed. And it's exactly the opposite. People didn't want to be in cities. As I've said before, Thomas Jefferson said that cities are a threat to the health, the wealth, and the liberty of man. And those cities didn't even amount to a small suburb today in his time. But they have always been a threat to your health, your wealth, and your liberty. And people took the opportunity to get out. There he is. There's the mustache of the Lyft guy. And the beard has come off. This guy is just a socialist urban planner. The people who will not build the roads as they pack more and more people into the cities. They just want control over your life. They said, this is a trusty conveyance, he said. It is always there. It is always ready. It is on no schedule but yours. Buses can't do that. Trains can't do that. Even Uber makes riders wait. And it's what allowed people to escape the cities and live in the suburbs. That's why the urban planners call that urban sprawl. They don't want you getting out of the cities. They don't want you getting out of their control. And neither do the little pettifogging bureaucrats who want to have complete control over your life. And neither do the big government central planners, the globalists, the United Nations. That's why they have the smart cities. They want to be able to tax and to track your every movement. And they point out that for Germany to meet their emission targets, of course, half the people who are now using their cars would have to switch to bicycles, to public transportation, or to ride sharing. And that would require drastic policies like having local governments ban cars, which they're already doing in many of the cities. Exactly what they are doing. And when you look at what is happening with us, we got now Australia coming out and saying that they are going to ban Huawei, I think is the way you pronounce that Chinese company. It's 5G, folks. They don't want the Chinese. They know that this is espionage. They know that they're going to be watching your every move. They don't want the Chinese doing it to them, but they want to do it to you. They're going to be watching your every movement. Welcome back. I'm David Knight. In this last segment of the show, I want to talk a little bit more about technology. I want to talk about killer robots. Who's going to control these killer robots? Will they be so-called autonomous robots? Will the autonomous robots be able to be hacked? These are questions that we need to talk about. We need to think about as a society, because the people who are developing this technology, in most cases, I have found that the people who are working for the military-industrial complex or anybody else is working on technology, they don't really think through the implications of where this is going. And we need to think through that for them if they're not going to think through the implications of this technology. They're too busy solving the intellectual puzzle. They take a great deal of pride in being able to do that. And that is something to be proud of. But you have to think about where this is ultimately leading. We're going to talk about that in just a moment. Before we do, real quickly, I want to remind you of the products that we sell at InfoWarsStore.com and some of the sales that we have there. Things that's that will help you to support your health as you support free speech here at InfoWars. At InfoWarsStore.com, we have some of the specials. Real Red Pill, 50% off. We have Knockout, our all-natural sleep aid, 40% off. We have Brain Force, 25% off. We have BioTrue Selenium, 20% off. Of course, that is a non-GMO organic selenium, 20% off. That's why we call it BioTrue. And we have our special just for our audience, our Wake Up America coffee, 20% off with the code REALNEWS. That's either original or immune support blend of Wake Up America coffee. That's non-GMO, 100% Arabica blend, and that is 20% off with the code REALNEWS at checkout. Check that out at InfoWarsStore.com. We really do appreciate your support. Let's talk about, as I mentioned before, we have this Chinese communications company, Huawei, I think is the way you pronounce that. They were blocked here in the United States previously. They and their another corporation there from China, ZTE, because they were concerned in terms of getting into the 5G market. They said, well, this is going to be used to spy on people, isn't it? And we will have the Chinese corporation turning this information over to the Chinese government, won't they? Uh-huh. Yeah, you're exactly right. Then the question for us is, why should we allow our U.S. masters to be spying on us, whether it is a U.S. corporation or whether it is the U.S. government. That is what's going to happen with 5G, besides the health issues. That's why they're pushing so hard on establishing 5G and smart cities where they can lock you up, take away your ability to move, put you in micro apartments and so forth, and then spy on everything that you do, track your every movement, follow everything that you do. So now Australia has joined the United States and said, we're concerned about foreign interference and hacking. And China has said, well, that's just an excuse because you don't want our Chinese company there. Well, take a look at the way that Google, who is most likely going to be running these smart cities, they're the ones behind this prototype smart city in Toronto that they call Sidewalk Labs. They are raising concerns there, even with the liberals in Toronto, who are saying, why would we want a situation where Google is tracking our every movement, even watching us as we throw away trash and recording all that information, taking that information and monetizing it? But I don't want them to know all of this stuff that we're doing. And if you look at the way that we have been treated here by Google, by YouTube, instantly deplatformed, conspiring with other giant corporations and doing it all within a 12-hour period. Nothing had changed for years. I had never been given a warning when I was deplatformed. Now I am an individual who can't set up an account with Google or with YouTube. Is that going to happen in the cities? Are they going to ban you from city space just like they have banned me from cyberspace, Google and YouTube? Do you really want that? Do you want the people who are working hand in glove with the Chinese communists to track the people there with biometric information, to ban information, to hide it from people? That's what's going on in China right now. The Chinese censors are doing that kind of information there. As a matter of fact, I've got an article here. Censorship happy Xi Jinping. Remember, it was Hu was on first, and then Xi is on second. And I know what's coming. I know what's coming. Anyway, he is out there saying he wants an internet that is clean and righteous. And he doesn't want vulgar content like Winnie the Pooh. He's upset because people were mocking him, saying that he bore a resemblance to Winnie the Pooh. Does he walk around without his pants? I don't know. Is that why he's saying that he wants a righteous internet that is purged of stuffed bears who don't wear pants? That was the picture that got him upset that you're seeing right there on the monitor. Him walking with Barack Obama, and they compared them to a short, chubby Winnie the Pooh. They compared Xi to Pooh. Xi Pooh. It kind of sounds Chinese, doesn't it? Xi the Pooh. Anyway, comparing him to the tall, skinny Barack Obama that looked like Tigger, I guess. So he says, we need to reject the vulgar, the base, the kitsch. We need to put forward healthy, high-quality internet works of culture and art. And, of course, he will decide what culture and art are. She came under extensive heat for abolishing presidential term limits. Then Chinese censors went into overdrive along with their partners, Google, to restrict any speech that even mildly criticized the decisions over social media. So they started purging, according to TechCrunch, back in February. So he gave himself, he got rid of term limits, said, I'm going to be president for life, communist dictator for life. And he's going in there creating a cult, a human worship cult, just like Mao had. And he's tearing down posters of Jesus and putting up pictures of himself. He's making himself into a god like Chairman Mao. And then he's using his useful corporations, this kind of corporate fascism, to shut down terms like, I don't agree. So when he abolishes presidential term limits, and people are talking about this on social media, he says, all right, you find the posts out there that have these terms in them and shut them down. I don't agree. Migration, immigration, re-election, election term, constitution amendment, constitution rules, proclaiming oneself an emperor, and Winnie the Pooh. You shut down all of those things if you find them. And Gulag is doing that for him. Doing that for him. Why? Well, because they want to set up business there. You know, they're going to be our corporate masters. They're going to run the smart cities for us. They're going to monitor everything and report it to their masters, whether it's United States government, the NSA, the CIA, or whether it is Xi the dictator. Waymo wants to get into business, into the self-driving business in China and Shanghai. And they're planning a big push. Waymo is what they call their self-driving cars. And of course, their self-driving cars are even worse than Tesla's self-driving cars. When I talked about earlier the fact that the National Transportation Safety Board is conducting human experiments on the highways without your permission or even your without your consent or without informing you, it's because they have this agenda where they want to control transportation. And it's one of the reasons why they're subsidizing these electric car companies like Tesla. And it is shameful what they're doing with Tesla, the kind of subsidies that they're getting. But they're doing it with these other companies as well. Google is even worse because their cars are going to be the next level of self-driving cars. They're not going to have a steering wheel. They're not going to have brakes. And I'm not going to get in one. I will never get in one of those cars. But they're now going to establish a wholly owned company, Waymo. They're going to call it in China, Waymo. And that's what I ask. Why? Why mo of this gulag stuff? I don't want no mo of gulag. So you could very well ask Waymo, which is what they're asking in China. We had the third series, and I talked to Joseph Farah earlier this week because they had a three-part interview with George Gilder. He was a guy who wrote a book in the 1994, Life After Television. 13 years later, Steve Jobs is telling everybody, you need to read this book. This talks about how digital transformation and phones and everything are going to be transforming everything. Now, George Gilder's newest book is not Life After Television, but Life After Google. And as part of this three-part series, the first one they talked about the fatal flaw, he talks about in his book, the fatal flaw with Google is the fact that they have a centralized, top-down, hierarchical world. And it comes from the fact that they're Marxists. You know, when David Horowitz gets shut down and he thinks, oh, it's just because these corporations are being bullied by politicians. No, he doesn't understand their fundamental worldview is one of Marxism and Satanism. They want to fundamentally transform the world. They want to do it from a centralized control. And then after that, he talks about, in this final episode here, he's the final part of the interview, he's talking about the way of the future. It's going to be something he calls a cryptocosm. In other words, we're going to have a distributed, not a centrally controlled network. That is going to be the wave of the future. People are going to value their privacy. They're going to value their freedom. And they're going to seek out solutions that provide that. Google's fundamental flaw was it wants to be centralized. It has a Marxist deterministic worldview. And it wants to control everything that you do and see everything you do without any privacy.